Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Today is Saturday, March 23rd, and this is Celtics Beat on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio-video coverage of the Boston Celtics. I'm Adam Kaufman. Episode 564 features Barstool sports writer and good friend of this show, Dan Greenberg.
And I'm Evan Valenti, and today's show is powered by Prize Picks. Prize Picks is the official daily fantasy partner of CLNS Media. Download the app and use the promo code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100.
What's up, everyone? New Celtics Beat. Great to be here with you, enjoying the weekend. It's basketball, wall-to-wall basketball all the time. This is the best time of the year when it comes, you know, at least pre-NBA playoffs, right? Because I know a lot of listeners to this show or viewers of this show on YouTube, and by all means, check us out on the CLNS Media YouTube page. Rate, review, subscribe, comment on the video. We like to read those things, even if they're mean. Doesn't matter. Just happy you're there. But it's, you know, you might push back saying, like, what do you mean this is the best time of the year? This is March. I care about May, June, playoff runs, hanging banners, chasing banner 18, duck boat parades. Sure, get all that. But in terms of gambling and filling out brackets and everything, like, I'm choked up out of excitement that comes in this time of year, the spring of March. I love March Madness. Nothing but games on all day long, which does a little bit, I guess, get in the way of our beloved Boston Celtics, who, you know, are coming off of yet another thrashing of the Detroit Pistons without Jason Tatum, by the way. He was all, you know, street clothes, ready to go. Jason bus one, as Adam Himmelsbach tweeted out. This was not a heavy lift. We're not going to spend a lot of time talking about this win over the Pistons. I don't want to fully mock it, obviously, because, you know, we'd be sitting here if they lost to the Pistons, just crushing them like we were doing when they blew a 20-plus point fourth quarter lead against the Cavaliers. Win the games you're supposed to win, and then we can continue to focus on the big picture. And in the big picture, as Evan Valenti is here and Dan Greenberg is here, you know, we can just – this team, I don't need to tell you guys, I don't need to tell our listeners, it's a juggernaut. It is an absolute juggernaut, obviously, sitting at 54 and 16. I know, Greeny, you have tweeted out, like, let's get to 60 wins before 20 losses. Can we do that? Can we get to the 60-20 club? You being a big proponent of the 40-20 club, obviously.
Yeah, they're
at an 800 winning percentage right now. They are winning 80% of their games on the nose, guys, running away with, never mind the East, the entire NBA. They had won 11 straight games, and then they have that hiccup in Cleveland. It's followed by the game against the Nuggets where they can't close, can't execute at the end of the game, and people are starting to go, oh, wait, are there some warning signs? Are there some concerns, some things we need to be aware of? They've won 8 straight since that, and they're just mowing down opponents, winning with ease. And that's with guys in and out of the lineup, and that's where I want to begin. You know, Sam Hauser is back. Kristaps Porzingis at a higher level is back. Tatum and Brown are like alternating off nights. You know, it goes to show how well Boston's playing that Tatum is actually willing to take days off. But the concern, potential concern, Drew Holiday. We had a report from Adam Himmelsbach, and I'm just going to read directly from a portion of the article here. He has missed 3 straight games now. Obviously did not play against this win, in the win over the Pistons. The point guard sprained his right shoulder joint says he suffered it when he was hit on a screen during the win over the Wizards on Sunday, told the Globe he has been experiencing, quote, dead arm, which turns people like Greeny into internet doctors trying to research rest and recovery and remedies for dead arm and how concerning this should be. Part of it, Greeny, is it's the Boston Celtics, so you never quite know with an injury how seriously you should take it. But another part of it is they have such an incredible lead, such an incredible advantage right now that you don't need to rush him back. You could say, take the next 2 weeks, just get right, and we'll see as we get closer to the playoffs. You being the just emotional roller coaster of a fan that you are, are you worried?
So there's what I tell myself to believe and think, and that's the rational side. And then there's, like you said, the history and the dark, deep fear that we all have is are we finally going to experience one of the greatest seasons many of us have ever seen the Celtics play? You mentioned 60-20. They have a top four all-time scoring differential. Their net rating is the best since the MJ Bulls. They're winning all these games in a row. They've lost three games in 2 months. But it's you're one injury away from that really all just falling apart. And I think the fear is we're not going to be able to see what this group looks like healthy for an entire run, because if they are, their contender profile, their how they're playing, their depth, everything we're seeing says this team is more than capable of winning the title. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, okay, let's say he comes back, but is his shot going to be the same? Is he going to be as aggressive defensively going around and navigating screens, or is he going to be, you know, thinking about his shoulder? So there are small things like that that I'm always going to be nervous about, because I remember when I was told that KG's knee was just a bruise and it wasn't a big deal, or that Shaq was right around the corner, or that Isaiah's hip was fine. You know, it's like, I don't know. I want to believe it. I want to take what Adam is saying with, you know, honesty and truth. But like, you know, if it's not that bad, they don't have a timetable, and maybe it's better that they tell us that. So I'm not checking the calendar every day, but the rational side of your brain says rest, recovery, they're 10 games up. Like, you don't need them. That's all true. The underlying fear is like, oh my God, like this is, it happened with Brogdon. It happened with Tatum's rolled ankle. Like, can we just have one run where we're completely healthy?
Yeah.
I'm looking at the standings too, and it's getting better by the day, even 11 games up now. And the only reason I checked, not to double check Greeny, the reason I checked is that, you know, I'm in my head, I'm going, did I say they were 54-16 or 56-14? Because they're just so wildly dominant and similar. but with 60-20 in my head, just to clear it up for anyone that doesn't know, 56-14, if that's not what I said before, maybe it is, and that would be great. But it's true, Ev. I mean, they have a dozen games left in the regular season. They don't quote-unquote need Drew Holiday for any of them, obviously, but we don't know, you know, how long he is going to need. It's impossible for us to know, obviously. I'm not sure team doctors and coaches and staff and teammates know, let alone idiots like us. But if he, let's sort of best worst case this scenario, this whole thing. Best case, obviously, take whatever time you need, we'll see you for the playoffs. Worst case is this is obviously something that lingers into the postseason. And so for the sake of, I don't know, worst case, let's just look at that, because best case is best case, and that would be wonderful. Mm-hmm. Let's fear the worst for a second. What does that do to this team if Drew Holiday is unavailable for a long stretch of time?
I mean, is it leaking the playoffs or not? Because you look at their schedule the rest of the way. They have Chicago as we record. We're recording late Friday, early Saturday. So they have Chicago tonight. Two games against Atlanta, New Orleans, Charlotte, Oklahoma City, Sacramento, Portland, Milwaukee, New York, Chicago, Charlotte, and Washington. So they don't have a lot of big games left. They can probably win the majority of them without it. Right? That's not going to be a, like, yeah, Oklahoma City, sure. You know what? I'm going to be fine if they don't win that game. New Orleans is playing really well. Sure, I'm okay there. Milwaukee for the last game against the Bucks, the playoffs, fine. Knicks, fine. The other games they can win probably without Drew Holiday being there. So I'm not really sweating that. It's more about the deeper you get into the playoffs, the more Drew Holiday is going to be necessary, right? Like maybe, you know, just see who they draw in round one. You know, it's things are still kind of up in the air. Could be Miami, could be Philly, could be Chicago, could be a whole bunch of different teams. Could be Indiana, who knows? Probably could take down the majority of those like eight seeds without Drew Holiday. The only one I'd be worried about is Miami, obviously, just because of the demons that still exist. Yes, but after that, you're going to need Drew Holiday. Like, I, you know, as much as people want to poo-poo the Magic, I'm not going to. They're a young team who have nothing to lose, that play hard and play great defense. And then there's the Knicks with Thibodeau, who's, you know, a tough-nosed team. And then you play, you know, in the Eastern Conference Finals and the NBA Finals. So the longer you go, the worse, the more important Drew Holiday is. Not beating Denver without him, just fact. You might be able to get past the Bucks. You might be able to get past, you know, the Knicks or whatever. But you're not cutting down the Nets, to make a March Madness term, without Drew Holiday. It's not happening. What he does on defense, way too important. I'm not that Greeny mentioned the fact that he might die a little bit more on screens just because of that shoulder, trying to protect that. Something that most people don't think about. I'm very worried about what he offers as a spacer to this team as the best corner three-point shooter in the league from either side. Boston, if you go and look at their net rating, they've been the number one offense for quite some time, and they're actually like the most efficient offense in the NBA, and Drew Holiday is a big part of that. So the worst case scenario is he doesn't get back to what he is and they don't accomplish what they need to accomplish without him. Like, I love this team without him. They're still very good. They beat the brakes off the Pistons tonight. It doesn't take much. But when you're talking about trying to beat the NBA champions with the best player in the league on it, you're going to need him. You need everybody. You need all hands on deck. And if he's not there, it feels a little bit more impossible without Drew on the floor.
I mean, listen, you have to remember, you have to go back in time, what, 6 months, whenever, September, when this trade happened, and you saw the Celtics at the end of all their transactions, they went from having four legit guards at the point guard position in terms of guard depth to essentially, you know, two starter caliber players in White and Holiday, and then you had Pritchard off the bench, right? Pritchard's having the season of his life. He's a certified gamer. But what do we know about the playoffs? If you are 6 feet or under, you are going to get targeted defensively. And even though Peyton gets in airspace and fights, you know, for his positioning, that doesn't change the fact that if you're playing someone like Jimmy Butler, he's going to target Peyton Pritchard on the block and use it as an advantage. That was the fear when they made all these deals to say, okay, your only two big guards now are Derek White and Drew Holiday. If you lose one of them, you are a lot thinner at the guard spot than you probably realize. We've spent all year being worried about the front court depth and the Porzingis injury and all that stuff. But unless they're going to be playing big, if you look at their guard rotation, if there's no Drew Holiday, so I think it's different if he plays and he's maybe 60% of the player we're seeing now. If he's completely out, you lose the spacing that Evan mentioned. You get some of that with Pritchard in an enhanced role. What you don't get is the other side of the ball. You don't get the switchability. You don't get the quarterbacking in the middle of the defense, which limits the type of coverages you can play. Like, he's way more important to me as a defender and what makes this team truly, truly, truly a championship contender than what he gives you as an off-ball shooter. Because this team has off-ball shooters. What they don't have is multiple versatile defenders at the guard position outside of Derek White and Drew Holiday. That's just the nature of their size. So for me, their concern is if they play these shifty offensive-minded guards and there's no Drew Holiday, do they have a weak link in their defense you can now attack? When you insert Holiday into that unit, there's no defender that you can repeatedly target and go after possession until Joe has to take him out. If, you know, it's the same thing. If Porzingis goes down and you have to play Cornette, Cornette's getting abused. It's the Kelly Olynyk LeBron rule. He's getting attacked every single time down the floor. That would be my concern if Holiday misses real time.
Well, hopefully he doesn't, obviously. We can only react to what we can react to and then just sort of look ahead and speculate, which is all this is. It's all we've been doing. You know, we don't need to break down the best case scenario because we all know the best case scenario is, you know, Drew's back in the lineup in a week. And then, you know, everything is normal and shoulder joint's fine and everything is good. That's probably not reality, but hopefully come the postseason, he is available. And we can, as we've talked about all season long, going back to the offseason, we can be just talking about a healthy team going into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Because obviously this team is as good, as talented, as deep, as equipped to win a championship as anybody else, if not everybody else, in the NBA, more so other than anybody other than Denver. I mean, it's Boston and Denver. That's the finals mm-hmm. matchup that everybody is anticipating, but obviously you need to be healthy. Presumably, you need to be healthy to get there. And the Celtics, it was a largely healthy playoff run each of the last couple of years. You know, guys were somewhat in and out, but in terms of having all your key guys, something that didn't exist. We talked about this on the last show, something that didn't exist, you know, for many, many years when the Celtics were routinely falling short or failing to meet expectation or just weren't quite there yet in terms of their overall talent. Mm-hmm. You know, there was that one or two key guys that were missing. Hopefully, obviously, a month from now, because we're essentially a month from the playoffs, a little less than that even, hopefully everybody is good and we can be, you know, looking at a nice long month and a half long run to a championship. That's, you know, what we all are hoping for. It's you know, great for us just as fans, let alone people that cover the team in any capacity or, you know, do a show like this. A couple of the guys that you guys have mentioned, the other guards, Derek White, Peyton Pritchard. I want to spend some time on both of them and just sort of what we're looking at here, what we're getting to see and the opportunity that has come from obviously the departures via trade of Marcus Smart and Malcolm Brogdon. This is not, by any stretch, a conversation about Smart and Brogdon. It's entirely about the guys who are still here and how they are flourishing without those two guys. And that is not any slant or criticism of them. It's just opportunity, right? It's Derek White's out there in the fourth quarter. It's Peyton Pritchard is not glued to the bench. So, Pritchard, I want to, because Holiday's been out or Hauser's been out or whoever's been, you know, Brown's missed time, you know, in and out of the lineup. I'm not going to go over everything for Pritchard, but I want to read you. What's that?
He's played every game.
Well, no, but I want to read you his stat line for every game since just before the All-Star break that he has played at least 30 minutes. Okay. Mm-hmm. You go back to a blowout, 50-point win over the Nets on Valentine's Day. We all remember that game. Pritchard had 28 points. Shot 11 of 16 in that one, by the way. I'm not going to read all of those stats, but 28 points and, you know, just a scoring machine in that game. Since then, this month, March 11th in that homecoming in Portland, where the Celtics won that game by more than 20, he went for 11 points, 8 rebounds, 8 assists, flirted with a triple-double in that game. And then each of the last four games, he has gone for 30-plus minutes. Yeah, the game at Washington, again, 26-point win, where he had 14 points, 13 assists, 5 rebounds. Following game, first of two against these Pistons, 23 points, 7 assists. The game over the against the Bucks, he had 19 points, shot 7 of 11 in that one. And then, obviously, this game in Detroit most recently, 20 points, 9 assists. This guy is, as you said, I mean, he's playing out of his mind. Greeny, obviously, and you think back a year ago when he wanted out of Boston, he wanted to be traded, he wanted to go to a situation where it wasn't, oh, I don't like you, Brad, I don't like Joe, I don't like my teammates, I don't like Boston, I don't like the fans, I don't like the Garden, I don't like da 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 da. I just want to play, like, just give me an opportunity to play because I know what I am capable of, and I need to go somewhere, even if it's a bad team, where I can show it. My words, not his. Mm-hmm. Now we're seeing it. Now, it's taken, obviously, absences from some other guys to get him these minutes. But when he gets the minutes, he delivers. How encouraging is that to you guys when you start to think about a playoff run and the fact that he may be needed, obviously, in a larger role than what he's ever been needed before in the postseason?
Well, I mean, like, look, this has been amazing. The aggressiveness has been really something. He's seriously getting to the teeth of defense and manipulating the defense as soon as he gets in there, whether it's via a layup or kicking it out to somebody. Mm-hmm. His energy changes the game. And that's one of the biggest things I think about Pritchard when you think about him throughout his entire career. He's kind of been a guy where you bring him in just to kind of just flip the energy. He's a guy that pushes off makes and tries to catch teams sleeping, because that's how he would score points, is a lot of times just beating the other team on the floor, getting an easy layup. Now he's getting to where he wants to go and under a lot more control. And to me, that's kind of a huge deal when it comes to trying to spell the two guys, you know, White and Drew, from having to run everything the entire time. And Tatum takes, you know, some of that, and Brown takes some of that too. But as a point guard, to try and become a more traditional guy and controlling the tempo of the offense, he's been much better there. And again, as Drew recovers here, he's just going to be more and more important. I'm going to kind of save a little bit of what I feel about Pritchard for a take I have later in this show. But like, his growth over the past couple of months has been tremendous. And, you know, when they gave him that contract, like, obviously he hadn't earned it yet. But it was like a kind of a good, in good faith, like, we believe that if we give you this contract and give you more of a role in this offense and a role in this team than just, you know, a couple of spot minutes off the bench, you're going to, you know, in turn repay us with production. And he's done that, in a couple of fold. Again, since that 50-point blowout against the Nets, for sure.
I was just looking up Greeny. Just, again, those handful of games or so, 5-6 games that I mentioned, I think 6 games, that he's played at least 30 minutes since that Valentine's Day. 204 total minutes. How many turnovers? Ev talks about him playing under control. How many turnovers do you think he has had in those 204 minutes?
And that was what, 6 games?
6 games.
4.
5.
Wow.
I mean, his turnover percentage is like under 8, or it's like 7 point something, I think, by now. But I will just say this. Of those 6 games you listed, big minutes, big production, there was a whole lot of Brooklyn, Detroit, and Washington in there.
Yeah, it's a lot. Look, it's a lot of bad teams for sure. But look, I mean, you still got to find your shot and hit it.
Totally. And that's sort of my point, is like, anybody who watches Peyton Pritchard over the summer knows that when he's playing in that pro-am Pritchard style, like,
dropping 80.
If you're a fringe NBA player, like, Peyton Pritchard is going to make your life hell. What's impressive about his season is, like Evan said, he's finding ways to make an impact against every team he plays on. If it's in his 15 to 20 minutes off the bench, you're still feeling the impact of Peyton Pritchard. And that's different. You're no longer just seeing him go out there for cardio and off-ball threes. He's now what I would consider a real traditional backup point guard, to where he's reading the game at a faster speed. He has a lot of TJ McConnell in his game right now, if you watch both guys, in terms of dominating that in-between space where you can either take a little pull-up jumper or you're throwing the lob to Cornette. Like, their chemistry is real. And I think that's always where he used to get into trouble, right? He would use his quickness, get into the paint, and you'd get the pump fake spins and then a shot clock violation. Now he's getting to the paint with the same force, but it's not only under control, it's with a plan. Like, he knows, it's a similar jump to Jaylen, where now they're driving and they know where to go with the ball. They know how the defense is going to react. I feel like you only get that with experience. So it shouldn't be a surprise that he's back to playing a usage and a minute rate that we saw during the finals run. And here he is burying the Bucks like it's game 7 or whatever in 2022. He's showing up on the road. He's showing up at home. You know, good teams, bad teams. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, the one thing we're going to know if he has to step up in a playoff series is he's going to be ready for the moment, right? Joe talks about it all the time. He is just always mentally locked in and mentally prepared. And I think we're seeing what happens. I mean, he's pretty close to his NBA prime years in terms of age. Isn't he, like, you know, he's older than Tatum, or right around Tatum's age, I think, right?
He and I share a birthday. How about that? He's 26 years old, turned 20.
Okay, so he's like Jaylen, where you're getting into that, you know, 28 through 31 age, where this is historically when NBA players, if you're any good, play their best basketball. And I think that's what we're seeing.
Quick break to tell you, today's show is brought to you by Prize Picks. Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is just heating up. Whether it's tournament season or the fight for a playoff home court, there's no shortage of high stakes basketball moments in this time of year. Get in all the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into some serious, serious cash. Prize Picks even offers injury insurance, so your entries stay in play, even if one of your players is injured. For basketball games, if a player who exits the game the first half does not return to the second, that player projection will not count against you, and the rest of your entry stays live. Folks, name me another service that even attempts to offer that. It's unreal. If I had that in my life for all the things that I like to use, you know, like in terms of this realm, like fantasy, right? Holy moly, would I be much wealthier than I am right now. That is absolutely 100 a stone cold fact. You know what else is a stone cold fact? Prize Picks is now the daily fantasy sponsor of CLNS. And thanks to our new partnership, our listeners get a pretty sweet new deal to sign up with Prize Picks. Just download the app, use the promo code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. That's promo code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100 after you download the app. Simple, right? Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, I mean,
now the Derek White stuff is just, I mean, Ev, I'll look at some of this tweet that you sent earlier, which is, you know, for anyone that hasn't seen, some of these facts are just incredible. I want to pull it up. And the sentiment that Ev had was that obviously our guy Derek White here is about to be a very wealthy man. So this is from Bobby Marks, who, of course, everyone knows from ESPN. Derek White has reached the 65-game criteria. The Boston guard is now eligible for postseason honors. White was named All-NBA Defensive Second Team in 2023. He has three pending bonuses. $250K for All-NBA Defensive First or Second Team. $500K for 185 3-plus, or 185 3-pointers made. He's at 172 right now.
Lock that in.
Yep.
And another $500,000 when he gets to 70 games played.
Lock that in.
Of course, he's got, you know, a dozen to get five. Yeah. So, and noted by Bobby, he's reached the all-defensive and games played bonus in 2023. So, obviously, set up to do so again, I would think. You know, I'd be shocked if he's not part of the first or second team as far as all-defensive. And most notably here, because we've been talking about this for a long time, White is eligible to sign a four-year, $123 million extension in the offseason. So this is a popular conversation among Celtics fans, and certainly this show. And I'm sure to a certain degree, we've had it with you, Greeny.
Mm-hmm.
Ownership, Wick Grosbeck in particular, has said time and time again over the years, if we are positioned to be a true contender to win championships, I'm going to pay for it. Don't give a damn about the luxury tax. We're going to pay to keep the right guys here. And there was a stretch of years where a lot of people were sort of shouting, put your money where your mouth is, but they weren't quite there, or there weren't quite the guys to do it. You could sort of, you know, you could be a little critical at the trade deadline about, you know, we're not going to go after whatever, you know. Generally speaking, though, you kind of got it. Now we're at a point where it's time to put up or shut up. You have to sign Derek White to that extension. You obviously have already paid Jaylen, no-brainer. Tatum's getting his, no-brainer. Pritchard got a contract before that, and I know they've been dealt away. Marcus Smart, Rob Williams, they got paid. There was the will they pay Grant Williams. Ultimately, they didn't. I think that's been fine, obviously. Porzingis, he got an extension upon, you know, being acquired in that trade. Derek White has to get paid. And I know there are a lot of us that would have preferred it happened earlier. Maybe the money wouldn't have looked quite what it's going to look like, but whether that was Boston not going full go to make it happen or White and his camp saying, yeah, I'm good, I'm going to wait, I'm going to bet on myself, I have no idea. Either way, it's working out in his favor and it has to happen in Boston. Is there any way it doesn't?
Well, I have one question. Does anybody know if Wick's TV show got picked up for another season?
His or Tom Werner's?
Right? I don't know. Whoever's in charge of that show, I'm pretty sure Wick gets some coin from that. Please pick it up. If I have to watch that show every single day for 24 straight hours from multiple televisions from now until Derek White's extension, I will do that because, you know, you're not going to be a championship contender without him as part of this equation. Simple as that. You made the decision to let Marcus Smart go. That has worked out, I think, better than anybody could have imagined, both in terms of fit, health, play style, contract moving forward. You've solved that piece, right? You have
a scapegoat.
Yeah, you know, like you've solved that. The question I think then becomes, who do you pick, Holiday or White? Who can you survive more without? The no-brainer, I think, answer is you pick the younger guy who you can sign for a longer deal. The selfish part of me says, Wick, don't be a little broke owner. Like, if you're not prepared, like, this is it. We're in the window. These are the fireworks. We're finally living the life that we dreamed about. Like, raise the ticket prices for all I care. Charge me more for League Pass. Like, I don't care. I just feel like they can't waste the opportunity, and you can't assume that he's going to take a penny under the $124 million, because why the hell would he? Jaylen Brown didn't do it. Jason Tatum's not going to do it. Porzingis kind of did, but he's, you know, he has his injury risks and age and all that. Derek White plays every night. Every night. He's like, you know how they talk about like the prototypical Patriot, take care of like, you know, of who represents your program. Derek White represents what it means to be a Boston Celtic. So if he's not the guy you pay, what's the point of paying anybody? Like, what more could he possibly do to warrant paying whatever his market price is?
Gonna have to. I mean, he's a perfect player for the way you want to play basketball today if you're going to beat a team like Denver. You got to understand that you're not in the same NBA anymore. It's not one-on-one basketball that kills you. It's all about team basketball, and the Nuggets do it better than everybody else. Derek White is a perfect player for that style. He can do pretty much anything you want a player to do on the basketball floor. He can guard up. He can guard down. He can hit threes. He can drive to the basket. He's got a floater game. He can't leave him open. He can handle the basketball really well. He can pressure the ball handle. He does literally everything at either a good above average or excellent level. He is the perfect basketball. And he's 6'5", somewhere in there. He's taller than
I. Yeah, I mean, listed at 6'4", so probably 6'2", 6'3".
No, I think he's taller than that. He's considerably taller than Drew, and when he stands next to Jaylen, he's not that much shorter. So it's
he's 6'4", bald, 6'5", with hair.
There you
six,
go. Four. There you go. We'll take it.
Maybe bald Derek White's the reason. I mean, this guy is literally having a career year. He is
a career year again.
Career high in minutes, in field goal percentage, in 3-point percentage, in free throw percentage, in rebounds per game, assists per game, blocks per game, points per game. And I know, like, well, the first thing you said was minutes per game. Of course, a lot of those things are going to go up. It's not drastic. The minutes per game are not drastic in terms of the career high. He has just been, Ev, you hit on, and I'm sorry to cut you off. I'll let you keep going. But it's not just he's a perfect player for what you want to, you know, achieve. And in today, like, this guy, he's a perfect player, period. I know he's not an all-star, not a, you know, fringe maybe. He's certainly not a superstar. He'll be on the all-defensive team. But I don't know if there are a lot of guys in the NBA. I'm sure the list is longer than I'm giving credit for. But it has to be a relatively short list where you say this guy could literally fit seamlessly on any team in the league. And Derek White's one of those guys.
He's going to have suitors. Just going to tell you that right now. And I'm already talking about Philly, who's going to have a ton of cap space. That's going to
need a point guard, right? Like, yeah, that's going to break me. Imagine if you're Philly, right? And you can potentially move, like, they've had this Tyrese Maxey, you know, revelation, but, you know, that backcourt is, you know, there's no resistance, right? So if you could take that burden off, I just feel like Derek White is the ultimate problem solver, right? So if you're a team that's looking to get over the hump, what do? You bring in Derek White. Who were the Boston Celtics in 2022? They were a team trying to get over the hump. What did they do? They brought in Derek White and they made the finals. You know, and I just think if you go back to everything that Brad has said since his first minute on the job, is his job is to build a roster that accentuates his two best players. Find me a guard in this league that accentuates their two best players and the way that Mazzulla wants to play and that Brad wants to play more than Derek White. You can't do it for under, you know, $100 million. You're just not going to find that type of player. It's just the reality of the economics of the market.
And this is Adam's point, like, you know, you just gotta hand him the full 124.
Yeah. You don't even mess around.
You can't let him get out the door. Like, I don't even want to entertain. I don't want anybody sniffing around. Like, it's twofold, right? It's like not having Derek
or whatever. He doesn't want to go anywhere.
It's not having Derek White on your team is one thing, and then having another team gain a Derek White is the other fear of this. Like, what if, like, Miami cleared all this cap space and got Derek White? I'd be absolutely mortified of what would happen. Like, I can't imagine it. I can't imagine him on Philly. I can't imagine him anywhere else. You can't let him leave the building when this is all done. I would just say, Derek, here's the pen. Here's the contract. It's for the whole thing. When you're ready, there it is. You can't get more money anywhere else. It's all right here, and this the team that we want to keep together has you along with it. I can call Derek White a whole bunch of different accolades just based on watching him play, but he's again the best compliment to the Jays you could ask for. He's not needy. He's not selfish. He plays team basketball the entire time, and he's durable as hell. You don't find any of those guys. It's so hard to find guys like that.
And honestly, I'm going to say something reckless that I know is bad business and should never happen to really anybody in the league. Offer him a no-trade clause if you have to offer him a no-trade clause. I don't care. You know, if he says, you know what, $120 million is great, but I have this, you know, $90 million from someone else, and I'm thinking this could be cool. You know, I'll get more shots. You say, okay, fine, no trade. I don't think we're going to live in a world where Derek White – says, I want out, and here's my list of teams, and you can only trade me here. Like, that's not who Derek White is. So do it. Throw him a no trade, even though that's like a death sentence in NBA contract. Derek White is a good person, okay? He is not going to hold this franchise hostage, and you have no way to replace him. Because let's say Drew's like, all right, I spent 1 year taking a reserve role. I'm done with that. I want one last ride to cash in big money. Okay, let's say he leaves. Well, if Derek White leaves, Peyton Pritchard's your only point guard on the roster. You're already a second apron team. You can't replace him. So it's like, it's kind of like with Jalen Supermax. Their hands are tied, but the good news is their hands are tied to a very good basketball player who makes you a championship contender.
Drew Holiday obviously is going to be extension eligible soon, right? April. I think it's next month he's extension eligible. Not that I expect anything to get done during the season. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But everyone is, you know, people have been saying the right things. Like, since he was acquired, Brad Stevens, I mean, it was written about how he's been fawning after the guy for years, desperate to have Drew Holiday on the Celtics, much like his predecessor Danny Ainge was for so long. And Drew has said, yeah, I'd like to be here. I'd like to stay. And there's that tired of moving around component as well. I'm sure he and his wife like to settle in, especially if this team is annually contending for championships, which if healthy, they should be. Their best players are in their prime years. He can be much like Porzingis. Not that these guys are old, but you know, they're not Horford, but they can be those sage vets that can just be those pieces, you know, those complementary pieces that help get you there. So another one, it's, and we don't know exactly what that money will look like, but is this another guy that we, one, take him for his word, believe he wants to be here, and two, expect to see him get paid?
I think you have to believe him, right? Like, you believe everybody until they give you a reason not to. So, you know,
yeah, Kyrie Irving wanted his number in the
right. Right. But like, we had no reason to not believe it until he, you know, that whole happened. I don't think you know, there are too many similarities in approach and personality between Jrue Holiday and Kyrie at that time in his career. But the money is tough because, like Evan said, there's going to be a lot of teams that are on the fringe that are going to have a lot of money to spend where guard is a position of need. So it's going to just come down to, A, if they win the title, I think I don't even know if that helps you or hurts you, because maybe he says, all right, I got another ring. Like, I was a martyr or whatever for this one run. Now it's time for me to cash in. Or he says, you know, I've made all this money, like, let's win a couple. But then even at a discount, you're probably looking at 25 plus. I mean, it's not like he's going to play for mid-level money and make like 13 a year. So it's just going to ultimately come down to, I think they commit for at least next year. And then you have the first year of Jalen's Supermax, but not until, I don't think we see roster changes if everybody is back until Tatum's first year of his Supermax, where it's like, okay, we got $90 million in, you know, two guys here. We got to, yeah. So I think you have this year and next year to figure it out. So maybe he does, you know, a 2+1 or something like that to where he has flexibility. But I think he's just as important. Again, we haven't won the title yet. So we haven't even won a playoff series yet. So who knows? We may get to that point and he may show, okay, you know what? Like, we can survive without him. We got to reallocate those resources in other areas. Or we may say, holy shit, we just won the title because of all the things Jrue Holiday just did during this playoff run. You now have to pay him his maximum. You know, it's just, there's too many unknowns on March 23rd, whatever this is, what day it is today. But I think he's just as important as any rotation player on the roster.
I think he's got an option coming up that's pretty hefty. I think it's for 30+ million. I don't know. We'll see. Again, as Green just said, it's going to be something that, you know, is it going to be? I don't think it'll happen in April. I'll put it that way. I think it'll happen in the offseason. I think they would rather have everybody focus on the goal of the season, and then when the season's done, we'll get to that. I don't think they want to upset the apple cart. I think when everybody, because this team is like obviously very focused on winning games and beating the piss out of teams and trying to make statements. It's pretty obvious. I mean, what was the stat Dick Leip had earlier tonight or last night? About what are they 20? Hang on. Let me pull this up. I was going to save this for later, but this is bad podcasting because I'm sitting here talking to myself.
All right. Well, you look that up. I'll ask a question.
Here it is right here. The Celtics set an NBA record with their win against the Pistons. There was their 15th 25-point win of the season. The other teams to do that, Milwaukee Bucks in 70-71 and 71-72. So that's Kareem on that team. And San Antonio in 2015 and 2016. So it's the fourth team that's done it, and they have plenty of opportunities to go to break this record because they're playing some scrub teams at the end of the year here.
So let me ask you guys this, because it's one part of this discussion that we did not mention. Derek White has 1 year after this year. You mentioned Jrue has his player option. If they do not sign their extensions at any point this summer, do you trade one of them, knowing that they're an expiring deal and can leave for nothing, because you can't replace it? So you'll have Derek at 18.8 and you'll have Jrue at 35 something. If you're looking in the future and you say, all right, here come the Supermax salaries, do we turn one piece into two if they're not going to extend now? Do you have to sell early? Because if you get to the deadline and you don't feel that, let's say Jrue's going to stay as an unrestricted free agent, well, every team in the league knows that suddenly his price is 50 cents on the dollar. So if they don't extend this summer, NBA, the business of the NBA says you probably should trade them a year early, which is a very dangerous discussion if neither guy signs their extension. Then what do you do, especially knowing that you're going to be a second apron team and you're not going to be able to combine contracts to replace high money players?
Well, I'm glad you brought this up because, and this isn't a direct answer to your question, but we can circle back. The thing that I was going to bring up next is that if I'm Wick or just the ownership group, but Wick is like the face of it, so we always default to him. If I'm Wick, the thing that equal parts excites me and scares the crap out of me is that, as you've said multiple times, you're a second apron team. This is your group. Now, the reason that should be exciting is because if healthy, and even if you're dealing with maybe some nagging stuff, you're still talented enough to win a championship, young enough, equipped enough. You have a window to win not just one, multiple banners. We could be talking about banner 18, 19, 20. How amazing would that be, obviously? But this team, like, I mean, it's, you know, they're not, if something goes sideways, you know, White wants out or Holiday wants out, these guys leave. You can't, as you said, like if anyone has any sort of even remote familiarity with the salary cap and the structure and these aprons and the way this all works, and we've talked about this a fair amount on the show historically, you know, you can't just go out and take that money and allocate it somewhere else. You can't just go sign, you know, $30 million a year free agent off the street. You can't do it. And so you sort of think back to what the Warriors were for so many years, except there was the freak year when the TV money went up and they were able to bring in Durant out of nowhere. But generally speaking, you know, this is a team that has either had to react via trade or most notably in the draft. And that's just, as a franchise, that's where the Celtics are right now. Because if again, you know, you have so much money tied up into your superstars and even some complementary pieces that, you can't, like, a guy, it's July 1st or whatever used to be exciting in terms of the start of free agency. It doesn't matter around here anymore because you can't afford those guys, like those Hamptons trips and like, it doesn't matter. It's irrelevant now. And that can be a good thing. It can be a great thing because you're already there. You're already there. But the reason I say this about Wick, equal parts exciting and scare the crap out of you, is exciting, we're already there. And we have some level of control over it. Like, we can just max White and hope that he's happy and takes it. And we can give, you know, throw a boatload of money at Drew and hope that he takes it and wants to stay. And then problem solved. But the scares the crap is if one or both actually want to leave, what do you do? What in the world do you do? Which is obviously what you're talking about right here, Greeny. And I think the answer is I don't foresee that with White. I think White gets paid and stays. Mm-hmm. So Holiday becomes the guy to me where, you know, I don't view him as a mercenary. I don't think he wants to hop from team to team chasing championships, especially when he's already in a situation to win one. And he already has a ring. So yeah. Like you said, you know, is he going to go to, not that Brogdon chose this, he was traded, but is he going to be like a Malcolm Brogdon, go to a mediocre to crappy team, but he can start and average 20 points a game and all that stuff? Does Holiday want to be that guy again? I have no idea. I don't know him on any sort of personal level. He seems like a very team-first guy versus a me-first guy, but everyone has their priorities, especially after they've already gotten that ring, and maybe he gets his second one this year. But the long-winded answer to your question is I think that you'd have to trade him. I don't think you have a choice. You have to get an asset in return so you can try and flip that and turn into something else that can help you, because you can't afford to let any of these guys at this point just walk out the door.
Yeah. And I think it's, you have to look at it. The first question is, okay, his player option is 35. What teams out there in cap space that are an attractive destination, how close can they get? If they can get to 30, your baseline offer to him in an extension has to match whatever the market price is going to be. Then he says, okay, like, there's nobody really out there that I would want to go to for 20 million. I'm just going to pick up my player option. If he does that, I think, like you said, if you can't come to terms on an extension and he picks up his player option, you have to trade him. We just saw this happen with James Harden and the Sixers. They didn't come to an extension. He picked up his player option. Daryl Morey had to get something for that asset or he loses him for nothing. Now, I don't think Holiday would go about it the same way, but the idea behind a guy who's an expiring deal on a luxury tax team, for you, a second apron team, your only choice is to get something early or in return for that asset. And I'm with you. I don't think you're flipping Derek White, right? Like, coming from where he came from, I don't think he's turning down $124 million. I think with Holiday, maybe a little bit different. If he's going to say, all right, why should I take a 3-year deal at a discount for you when I just was, you know, the ultimate sacrifice fifth option, when I can join the Sixers or, you know, the, you know, I don't know, any other fringe contender for similar money and a bigger role. I mean, who knows? Maybe that's more enticing. And in that instance, you're screwed because then he turns down his player option, hits unrestricted free agency, and you don't get anything. And it's the worst case scenario.
Hope for the best.
We'll yeah, all you can do is pray.
That's right.
Well, I think it's probably a good place to, no pun intended, but cap it here. You know, there's obviously yeah, another.
I got to get one thing in, Kaufman.
Yeah, please.
I got to get one thing in, and that's and I just have like a it's almost like a refocus, if you will. I do want to end this show on a little bit of a different note. This feels a little negative. We're talking about the offseason.
I'm just nervous, okay? His shoulders hurt. I'm freaking out, okay?
Yeah, I know.
And this is also, Ev, how often have we talked about, well, what do we talk about during the regular season? Because none of it means anything until the playoffs. This conversation today on this show, which I think has been a good one, has been the height of, you know, there are a dozen games left in the regular season until the playoffs. So, let's focus on some issues that they're facing going forward.
Well, I just want to refocus everybody up because I think we have our attention in the wrong places when it comes to certain things.
Start the show over.
Yeah, right. I want to address the Boston media mafia.
Oh, sweet.
And I think we got to redirect our focus because clearly we're very influential. This is a big thing. People are still upset that Marcus Smart won defensive player of the year when he was amazing on that team. I don't care what people say. I watched it every night. It was great. We got to redirect our focus a little bit because I think this is weird. I think it's very weird that, like, you look at the All-Star team, right? Tatum clearly on there. Jaylen got on there, I think, pretty solidly, but there were people like, well, I don't know. I'm like, he's, you know, best team in the league. Should get probably 2 All-Stars, right?
Yeah, it's just, I would have chosen Derek White, but that's beside the point.
Sorry. You look at the end of the season stuff. Tatum's lock for, I think, first team All-NBA. We'll see how the voters vote this year when he can go position list. I'll hold my breath on that. But he's a lock. Jaylen's not totally a lock for this one. Derek White should be on the all-defensive team. But again, we'll see how they treat guards. You know, I'd say he's a lock, but we'll see. This team is unbelievable, as we've talked about. Fourth best net rating in the history of the league. They're the best offense in the history of the NBA. I went back because I thought this would be fun. I like Kirk Goldsberry a lot. I like his little
chart. Oh yeah,
his quadrant.
Quadrant of woe.
I love that. So I went back, and he does it, I think, every week, or every 10 days
after every 10 games.
Yeah. So I went back. And if you go back and look at this thing, the Celtics, there are 3 times in his rankings where the Celtics ranking is not posted on the chart. It's NA. Only 3 times. So not counting those 3 times, in the 20 times that Kirk Goldsberry's made a chart, the Celtics' worst net rating in a span of 10 games has been 5th. Lately, they've had 4 straight 10-game sample sizes where they've been the number one net rating team in the league and number one offensive rating team in the league. They've been number one, let's see here, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times in 20 graphs. They've been almost half the time they're the best team in the league. Joe Mazzulla needs more coach of the year love. I think we need to start focusing our powers to this. Brad Stevens should be an absolute lock for executive of the year because of the team he put together. Jason Tatum should be a lock for first team All-NBA. I think he'll get there. If they're only going to get one All-NBA guy and they're going to have the executive of the year, maybe one all-defensive guy, Joe has to be like in the very, 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 very short list for coach of the year. And I know Mark Daigneault's done a tremendous job with the Thunder team, and honestly, he probably should win it.
Yeah, but he should get my vote.
There's not enough Joe Mazzulla should be the coach of the year talk because he's been – unreal, both as a personality and as an X's and O's guy. Here's another thing. We talked a little bit about guys getting better. Derek White is the best version of Derek White we've ever seen in our lives. Jaylen Brown, best version of him we've ever seen. Jason Tatum, best version of him we've ever seen. Peyton Pritchard, best version of him we've ever seen. Sam Hauser, best version of him. I can keep going on and on. The best version of all these players is happening currently under Joe's tutelage. The only thing that I'll add to this before I let you guys have the floor is it should not just be an award for Joe Mazzulla. It should be about the actual entire coaching staff, because this the coaching staff under Joe has preached the same message very clearly. The Celtics have received it very clearly and are breaking all these records, are the best team in the league. They're up 11 games in the Eastern Conference on their competition at the very best. This is a beatdown of a season. The Celtics should be rewarded for it, and that's why Joe Mazzulla should be coached there.
Greeny, I'll be honest, and I'm sure you see this more than Ev, more than me, just, you know, knowing the volume of mentions that you'll get in your Twitter, you know, wall, timeline, all that stuff. I don't need Joe to win Coach of the Year. I just need more people to even acknowledge that he is a good head coach.
Right. Just admit you were wrong about Joe. Yeah. That's all I need.
That's all I want.
Go on a public forum and admit that you were wrong. I'm with you. And listen, I'm a Leicester guy. I got love for Mark Daigneault, you know, like some Massachusetts pride. I wish him nothing but the best. But I also think not only should Joe have a great case for Coach of the Year this year, he should be going on back-to-back. Coach, do we forget that he took over a team a week before the season and won 57 games and made it to the Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals amidst this organizational chaos of the head coach being a scumbag in the organization? Like,
not just that either. It's not like he was like Jeff Van Gundy coming in and doing it. He was second row Joe with zero experience whatsoever coming in and winning 57 games.
So you have that, right? Like, that alone is impressive. And what does he do to back it up? He gives you legitimately one of the greatest basketball teams in NBA history. Like, I don't think we can stress that enough. What we are seeing right now has only been bested by the Bulls, the 72 Lakers, and the 71 Bucks. That's it. I think that's the group. I can't remember. Whatever Grandy tweeted out. They have the fourth best scoring differential ever. Like, this doesn't happen in NBA history. And it's coming off a season where a guy went from probably, you know, doing some back-end data entry for highlight clips to being responsible for leading this team to a title. And all he does is win games. And what makes me so mad when people tried to – I'm, like, as fired up about Mazzulla as I do about Marcus Smart, because people are, like, so stupid about him. They say, oh, well, you know, he has all this talent. Everyone should win. The same people who say that, did we not live through 2018-19 when Brad Stevens, a coaching god, had all the talent in the world? Did that team put up the fourth best season in NBA history? I don't think so. So it's just like, I'm with you, Coffin. I just want people to admit that maybe Mazzulla has an idea of what he's doing. Thank you for letting me rant.
No, I mean, I still get these tweets on a I don't know about daily, but every time the Celtics play a game daily basis, I will have at least one person in my mentions telling me that, you know, well, they won again in spite of Joe. You know, or the rare loss, because again they're sitting at 56-14. Would have won this game if not for Joe.
Yeah, Ime would have won this game. That's my favorite one. Is Ime would have won this game, and I'm like, what? Come on, what?
I can feel myself getting triggered.
It's the worst. I just want again. I the magnitude of what the Celtics have accomplished in regular season is. Everybody's been, oh, who cares what happens? Like, wake up at the postseason. I get that mindset, but you can't just diminish all this other stuff that's happened in the last 5 months. Like, it's been unbelievable. They're in tremendous hands with Joe Mazzulla. And again, as Green just said, all he's done is just win games since he's been the head coach, and they've gotten better. And just to wrap a bow, just to just circle this all back. One of my biggest concerns about this Jrue Holiday situation is it seems to me like the curveball Joe was talking about of having at the beginning of the season revolves very heavily around Jrue Holiday, and that's how I'll end it.
Do you think, and we'll end the show in a second, but I know it doesn't work this way for a reason, and for anyone that doesn't know, postseason awards are voted on at the end of the regular season, so the postseason does not influence those votes. Again, it's done that way by design. I have no problem with it. Let's just say, hypothetically, it worked differently, and the Celtics won the championship.
Well, yeah.
Do you think that that significantly enhances Joe Mazzulla's chances? Like, would Joe Mazzulla, go from, he's probably a coach of the year finalist. Yes, he won the award.
To be honest, I think he's going to have the Eric Spoelstra treatment, right? Like, I don't think Spoelstra's ever won it, I don't think. And he's, you know, obviously regarded as one of the best coaches in the NBA, sure. I think.
Yeah, maybe the
when you're on a team that has extreme talent like that, unless you're Greg Popovich, right? I think just it's going to go to those teams that exceedingly outperform expectations.
What you got there, Evan?
He was a Coach of the Year in 2016-2017.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that doesn't count. No. But you know what I mean? Like, for him to only have a Fugazi Coach of the Year, it's kind of crazy because you would think, you know, like, especially with their deep playoff runs, they won the titles with LeBron, and, like, even he couldn't get it. So I don't need his name on the hardware. I just want him to have the respect that would come if he were able to win a championship because – there's only, what, three or four active coaches that have ever done it? So,
do you ever, all these, because you go back and forth with these people on Twitter a lot, how many of these people have at least attempted to give you reasons for why Joe Mazzulla is a bad head coach?
None, but I think they know that I'm going to take the bait no matter what they say. You know, I think.
No, but I asked that because I think that would be that, you know, as the regular season winds down here, that would be a good show topic. Let's try and engage these people and we could, like, we can do this on Twitter and then we can circle back and do another show in a few weeks. Like, let's ask some of these.
Well, Twitter I can trolls, tell you, like, they'd say, you know,
what is it that you don't like about Joe Mazzulla? And we can see if there's any validity in any of their comments. We can hash it out.
I mean, this is, you'll hear, oh, he doesn't know how to call timeouts. They shoot too many threes.
That's been a problem this year.
Yeah, but that's the kind of, like, you know, whatever experience, whatever happened on his first week as the head coach of the Boston Celtics last year is how people choose to define him 160 games in. That's just.
Let their opinions evolve, Greeny.
I know. They're going to win the title. People will say it'll be in spite of him. They lose the title. They're going to say he's the reason that he does it. That's part of the gig. And I just think the only way you get past that is to win and then be secure enough to where you can just let me give you the praise and you don't need it from, you know, the Gary Washburns of the world who, you know, that'll be the day when we turn Gary Washburn, I think is when we'll convince the masses that Joe knows what he's doing.
Listen, took a little while, but
I think they like each other. Gary's talked about it on this show.
Gary turned on Derek White. You know, I think you know, if he can do that, there's there are no limitations to Gary's feelings. All right. Well, this has been fun. I hope everybody made it to the end because this was a good little passionate conversation to close things out. Enjoy all the March Madness. Hopefully people are out there betting, making money, all that good stuff. And of course the Celtics. You know, it's a long road trip here. I don't know that we're going to see Drew Holiday during it, but that doesn't matter. I don't care. Just get right. So start in Detroit, obviously, with this 27-point thrashing. And next up, tonight, assuming you're listening on Saturday, in Chicago, and then you get back-to-back with Atlanta. In Atlanta, this really strong by the schedule makers here. In Atlanta, Monday and Thursday. Are they just going to stay there the whole time?
Not only that, but the second game against the Hawks are on a back-to-back. So I think the Blazers come into Atlanta and play the Hawks in between the two.
That's so stupid. A home and home, fine. But a back-to-back in Atlanta that isn't a back-to-back when you have Tuesday, Wednesday in between, very dumb.
And I bet then, that second one's a loss.
Because they were out at the club.
Magic City is about to make a whole lot of wings.
Yep. Lemon pepper wings coming up.
At New Orleans to close March on Saturday, and then an April Fool's Day game at Charlotte, where, I mean, it's a Monday in Charlotte. Tatum's going to be out there for that. You can guarantee it. There's no.
So time. Annoying.
Yeah, but we'll be back here with you before that happens anyway, obviously once, sometimes even twice a week. Thanks to Ev. Thanks to, of course, Dan Greenberg. You can get him on Twitter at StoolGreeny. I am Adam Kaufman. Wherever you get your podcasts, rate, review, most importantly, subscribe, and, of course, leave comments and all that good stuff on the YouTube page. We enjoy reading them. We'll talk to you again soon. Go Celts. Get to 60-20.